Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
From Meteor's World News Headquarters in Bozeman, Montana, this is Cal's Week in Review, presented by Steel. Steel products are available only at authorized dealers. For more, go to steeldealers.com. Now, here's your host, Ryan Cal Callahan.
A lab-grown meat company in Australia has resurrected what must have been a staple of Ice Age Italian restaurants, the Mammoth Meatball. The company is called Forged, and they partnered with an R&D firm called Vow to, as their website puts it, rewrite the rules of food. The company grew the softball-sized hunk of meat using the DNA sequence for mammoth myoglobin, a key muscle protein that gives the meat its flavor. They didn't have the full sequence, so they filled in the gaps with elephant DNA. Here's one of the meatball masterminds explaining to Good Morning Britain why dodos wouldn't work, but mammoths and dinosaurs are literally on the table.
It doesn't have to be from mammoths. You could have chosen other extinct animals. I mean, for example, we could be talking, technically, we could be talking about, I don't know, dodo drumsticks here, couldn't we?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. There's just not enough genetic information to make that work. Because dodo nuggets were actually, when we set out on this journey, was actually the first idea that we had. We pivoted to mammoth because there's just more information known about it.
And could you go very quickly, could you go even further back? Could you create meat made from a T-Rex, a dinosaur?
So, funnily enough, the collagen sequence for T-Rex is actually quite well described. So you could, in theory, create a collagen-based supplement using Tyrannosaurus Rex.
No one has actually tasted the meatball yet, according to the British newspaper The Guardian. One of the scientists on the project said that because this protein hasn't been on Earth for thousands of years, we have no idea how a human immune system would react to it. Instead of providing actual food, the meatball is meant to call attention to the infinite possibilities of lab-grown meat and the problems with modern food production. Because making food, that's a question mark, that nobody should eat, really helps with our food production problems. Wonder how many people the R&D budget for this publicity stunt could have fed. All I can say is, I hope they have a foolproof plan for containing this 30,000-year-old protein strain.
You know, Fred, I hear that eating too much red meat is bad for you.
What a load of bunk. My father ate it every day of his life. He lived at a ripe old age of 38.
This week, we've got lions, legislation, and the dumps. But first, I'm going to tell you about my week. And my week has largely been spent cooking. In reverse order, calico bass from a Southern California spearfishing trip. Congrats on the new baby, Ryan Moore. Incredible fish. I baked this whole in the oven at 425 degrees with green onion, cilantro, olive oil, lots of salt and pepper. Incredibly good eating. Mixed up a batch of whitetail mule deer sausage which had to get done before our weather gets warm. Cold temps make for a better sausage bind. Use salt, pepper, garlic, onion, and Gallatin Valley Pale Ale. Makes a nice all-around sausage. Not too rich, but plenty of flavor. Whitetail neck, sandhill crane, and sharptail grouse bosom, which is a killer, super simple David Chang recipe dug out of the New York Times about 5 years ago. Bosom is something you need to track down and add to your repertoire. Just remember to double up on the scallion pancakes and sauces. Big batch of fried rice with all the leftovers, plus another big batch of mule deer bolognese, which I divided into separate meals for turkey camp later this spring. On top of that, I mucked out the garage, fixed a toilet that I should just replace, got my taxes finished, and walked through the typical Montana March-April snowstorms, wondering where the heck turkeys are going to be on a year like this one. We met some friends for a little hike and possible shed hunting expedition. Afterwards, we hit the new Bridger Brewing location out in Three Forks. You know that place where the headwaters of the Missouri, the Jefferson, the Madison, the Gallatin, those rivers come together? We sat next to a row of windows overlooking the patio, which was not remarkable. Other than through those windows and beyond the patio, a helicopter was parked on the lawn, which I suppose is a fine lawn ornament. And I wouldn't be telling you this if that helicopter had stayed that way. An ornament. It was a big scene as the chopper took off. Patrons, beer drinkers, lunch eaters, including my table, quit their conversations and filmed the ordeal. One of the helicopter passengers was filming the people in the bar, filming them. Like I said, big scene. So, for all you folks who watch that god-awful portrayal of Montana, the TV show Yellowstone, it's true. People fly helicopters all around Los Angeles, even for a Sunday beer at the brewery. This scene got me thinking, is taking your helicopter to the bar different than someone driving, let's say, a brand new F-350 into any depressed little town in America? Yes, it is, because helicopter commuting isn't common, but a brand new truck is a big price tag. Or, you know, thinking a little further, just having the ability to jump on a plane to hunt, fly to Texas or wherever, and hunt like I just did and what I plan to do more of, that economic freedom is likely the same as a helicopter trip to the brewery for many of my fellow hunters here in America. The wealth gap is relative, right? Zero is a long ways from anything other than zero, depending on your situation. That's what I objectively thought as I drove my aged Toyota back into town. Objectivity aside, though, in a Norman McLean, the Montana of my youth sort of way, that post-hike fun lunch with friends interrupted by helicopter, you know, honestly made me a little sad. Moving on to the waste management desk. A wild game processing facility in North Memphis is getting hammered in the media for dumping hundreds of deer carcasses between a neighborhood and a lake. Local media reports that the owner of Dino's Meats hasn't used a carcass removal dumpster for the past 2 years. Instead, he's been loading up the carcasses in pickup trucks and dumping them on another property he owns. That property, according to the report, is part of a public right-of-way. More recently, Dino's has just been dumping the carcasses right outside their facility in an industrial lot. Local residents have complained about the smell to the Tennessee Department of Agriculture, which for weeks was unable to make Dino's move the carcasses. Even though they found multiple unsanitary conditions inside and outside the facility, they gave the outfit a passing grade back in December. Another inspection last month also wasn't enough to force the processor to properly dispose of its waste. Last week, however, Dino's was cited by Memphis code enforcement and forced to clear the carcasses. Local residents claim that the animals were buried nearby, while Dino's says they had the carcasses removed. City officials have asked for proof that the bodies were removed, and there will be another court hearing in May. No word yet on whether they plan to recruit Columbo to take the case. Thanks to Tad Rogers for sending that one in.
You know, there's only one thing that I'm not clear about.
In another case of improper waste disposal, residents of a town in Ontario are allegedly dumping piles of meat in a local park to attract wild animals. Listener Camille grew up in the town of Mississauga. That's my best shot. If you want to write in with a correction, it's askcal@themeateater.com. Anyway, Camille sent me a report of beef roasts, ground beef, pulled pork, and piles of chicken being dumped in Settlers Green Park. Animal control officials believe someone is leaving the meat to attract wild animals like coyotes, foxes, raccoons, and turkeys. It's unclear whether these individuals are doing this to observe the animals or feed them during the winter. Hunting doesn't seem to be a motive, at least not so far as I've seen. Whatever the reason, city officials say they've never seen so much meat dumped in so short a time frame. They say some people are encouraging the behavior on social media, and they're doing everything they can to dissuade the residents from copying the behavior. As we've covered many times on this podcast, wild animals can become dangerous and aggressive when they see people as a source of food. It's one thing when it's squirrels or birds, but coyotes can be dangerous to dogs and small children, as we saw in last week's coyote attack on a toddler in Arizona. If you live in Mississauga and you know anything about this issue, give Animal Services a call. In our final story at the Waste Management Desk, archaeologists announced last week that they had found 2,000 mummified ram heads at the Temple of Ramses II in the ancient Egyptian city of Abydos. They also found mummified ewes, dogs, wild goats, cows, gazelles, and mongooses, or as some might say, mongeese. Researchers believe the rams were sacrificed as a votive offering to the famous pharaoh of Egypt 1,000 years after his death, around 200 BC. 1,000 years after his death. I don't care how famous Brad Pitt is, nobody's going to lay 1,000 dead sheep at his grave 1,000 years after he's gone.
Okay, so you're Brad Pitt. That don't impress me much.
Anyway, in case you're wondering, because I know you are, there doesn't appear to be any relationship between the name Ramses and the English word ram. The word comes from the Old English ram, with two M's, and is also related to the Old High German word ram, with one M. The first instances of word use occurred around the 12th century, a solid 2,500 years after the pharaoh's death. You're welcome. Still, it's fascinating that ancient worshippers believed that Ramses II would appreciate a whole pile of ram skulls in the afterlife. One of the researchers told CBS News that all of the skulls were likely offered at the same time instead of over many years. They were killed and brought from somewhere else and then deposited in a storage building in the northern part of the temple. Some of the skulls were still mummified, but many had decomposed down to the bone, Euromount style, or in this case, Cairomount style. If you've been wondering what to do with your taxidermy collection after your passing, I'd say this is an option. Get yourself one of those big mausoleums, you know, a big fancy house for dead people, and fill it up with animal skulls. Maybe archaeologists will discover it in 3,000 years and assume you were a healthy and wealthy, powerful ruler. Wouldn't that be nice for your dead self? Big thanks to Sebastian Balsam for sending this one in. Which of you listening right now took a class in school about Family Finances 101? No one? Yeah, me neither. Just like the importance of a will or college savings plan or even life insurance or estate planning, we have to know these things. But how do we figure it all out? That's why I'm excited to partner with Fabric by Gerber Life. Listen, one of the few things expected of you in life is to not let other people pick up after you. That's why I have life insurance, to make sure my stuff is taken care of even when I'm gone. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You could be covered from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/cal. That's meetfabric.com/cal. M-E-E-T. Fabric.com/cal. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you. to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meateater. Pay attention here because this is a hell of a good service. It's called the Wellness Company. Picture this, okay? You wake up, you got a scratchy throat, you're all congested, you got a runny nose, you got a cough, whatever. And you weigh your options, like you tough it out, get sick, take time off work, try to get a doctor's appointment sometime in the next few months, wait 2 hours at urgent care and sit in a room full of six sick folks. Or you open your medical emergency kit. You match your symptoms to the doctor recommended prescription, and you start on the right meds right away. These medical emergency kits, not a first aid kit, all right? It comes with doctor-prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues. So, on hand, strong antibiotics for infections of all types. Plus, a doctor's easy guide so you know exactly what to take and when. No waiting to see the doctor, no waiting at the pharmacy. It's all in there. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. Order yours online in minutes. Your kit will be rushed to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/meateater, but you got to use the promo code meateater. That's promo code meateater, okay, at twc.health/meateater.
Moving on to the legislative desk. In Virginia, residents have until May 10th to comment on proposed game and fish regulations for the upcoming season. Most states have similar comment periods, but I really like the way Virginia set up its website. Each new or amended regulation is listed with a clear explanatory title, and you can click on each to get a longer description. There's a link to comment at the end of each description, which you can do online. There are regs covering deer, elk, bear, turkey, fur bearers, small game, waterfowl, and boats, so everyone should find something that suits their fancy. Three new regulations that jumped out at me would create a gray fox hunting season in January and February, prohibit non-riparian stationary blinds adjacent to select national wildlife refuges, and standardize reporting regulations for all big game animals. Visit themeateater.com/cal for a link to the comment page, or just Google Virginia 2023 wildlife regulations. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources has reached a settlement with the Center for Biological Diversity to tighten trapping regulations in the state. The protectionist group had sued the DNR in 2020 over the accidental take of endangered Canadian lynx. The DNR pointed out that, on average, only one lynx was caught every 2 years, and that this accidental take was not the leading cause of human-related lynx mortality. It also didn't threaten the sustainability of the population, but the Center for Biological Diversity sued anyway, and now Minnesota trappers will be saddled with additional trapping regulations. You can check them out for yourself at the DNR's website, but they include a minimum loop stop of 3¼ inches, restrictions on snare location, and a maximum length snare. In Colorado, wildlife officials are considering cutting deer, elk, and pronghorn licenses in the northwestern part of the state by more than 40% as populations struggle through a rough winter. The drought last summer, combined with record amounts of snowfall, have likely killed thousands of game animals, according to Colorado Parks and Wildlife. To avoid starvation, those that are still alive are migrating further west than they usually do to find food. Some are grazing along roadways as they travel, which is increasing the risk of vehicle collisions. Semi-trucks have killed more than 10 pronghorn on at least 4 occasions. That's 10 or more pronghorn killed in 4 or more different incidents, not in total. In one accident in January, a semi going eastbound from Utah on Highway 40 hit 35 pronghorn on the road. In another incident, a pickup truck hit 18 pronghorn on a county road near Craig. Biologists have worked with ranchers to create feeding sites for struggling animals, and conditions will improve as the snow melts this spring. But Colorado Parks and Wildlife says they still plan to take a conservative approach to this year's license recommendations. They are recommending significant reductions in the number of licenses for elk and deer in the Bears Ears and White River DAUs and pronghorn in the Great Divide DAU for the 2023 big game season. These recommendations won't be finalized until the Parks and Wildlife Commission meeting in May. If you like to hunt deer, elk, or pronghorn in northwestern Colorado, now's the time to get involved. Take the time to get educated on this issue and send a note to your wildlife commissioners. There's quite a bit happening over in Washington, D.C. these days. In the U.S. Senate, the Congressional Sportsman's Caucus introduced the Duck Stamp Modernization Act of 2023. Under current law, when a hunter purchases an electronic federal duck stamp, the e-stamp is only valid for 45 days to allow for a physical stamp to be mailed. Once the 45-day period has passed, the e-stamp is no longer valid, and a hunter must have a signed physical stamp in their possession while hunting. This legislation will modernize this process by allowing hunters to have a permanent e-stamp on their cell phone while afield and will send the physical stamp after the latest waterfowl season has closed. Whether you like or hate this idea, send your U.S. senators a note. Over at the Department of the Interior, the Bureau of Land Management has proposed a new rule that would make it easier for conservation groups to protect large parcels of public land. Most people know that the BLM operates under a multiple-use mission, which was laid out by the Federal Land Policy and Management Act of 1976. The BLM manages the 245 million acres under its control to balance resources and uses and allow for recreation, mining, timber harvest, grazing, and other activities. The agency is tasked not only with ensuring these multiple uses can take place now, but also that future generations will be able to enjoy them as well. This new rule would add conservation to that list of uses. According to a draft of the rule, quote, "To support efforts to protect and restore public lands, the proposed rule clarifies that conservation is a use on par with other uses. The proposed rule does not prioritize conservation above other uses. It puts conservation on an equal footing with other uses." Under the rule, conservation groups would be able to lease BLM land, much like livestock grazers do right now. The BLM will identify rangelands that need this restoration work and offer leases of no more than 10 years. These conservation leases could also be purchased by mining or timber companies to offset their impact on the landscape as a condition of permit approval. E&E News called this a fundamental shift in how the agency manages its lands. The Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership and Backcountry Hunters and Anglers praised the rule, while the Center for Biological Diversity criticized it for not going far enough. It looks like mining and livestock organizations are waiting to comment until they have a chance to review the rule in more detail. There will be a 75-day comment period once the draft of the rule is published on the Federal Register, and it's safe to say that this is a long way from being finalized. It likely won't be completed until next year as the agency reviews feedback from stakeholders. You may have also seen that the Recovering America's Wildlife Act, or RAWA, has been officially reintroduced in the U.S. Senate. We had hoped that this legislation would be included in last year's omnibus spending bill, but that didn't happen. But hope springs eternal, and now we have another chance to codify generational conservation funding for threatened species and habitats. The bill hasn't changed substantially since last December, but Congress has. Republicans now control the House while the Democrats control the Senate and the White House. Fortunately, our elected officials are still negotiating. One of the biggest hang-ups continues to be funding. How are we going to pay for a $1.4 billion annual investment in this proactive conservation work? I'm told that the bill sponsors are very aware of this challenge, and they're working on a solution that can make everyone happy, or at least enough people happy to get it across the finish line in both chambers. For now, keep up those calls and emails to your U.S. senators and representatives. Protecting and restoring habitat is good for all species, and we should make sure our wildlife agencies have the resources they need to do that. Moving on to the dam desk. The largest dam removal project in U.S. history and the largest salmon restoration project ever officially began last month. Crews broke ground as they began work on removing the four dams that constitute the Lower Klamath Hydropower Project on the Lower Klamath River. This portion of the river is located in southern Oregon and northern California, and proponents say the dam's removal will help struggling salmon populations by allowing them access to 400 stream miles of historic spawning habitat upstream of the dams. Here's Dave Kaufman, a director at Resource Environmental Solutions and one of the folks responsible for the river's restoration.
We're going to unlock an amount of salmon habitat, high quality habitat that, like I mentioned, hasn't been available to these fish for over 100 years. And hopefully they're as excited as we are to get back in there.
The campaign to remove these dams has been in the works for decades. The Department of the Interior released a study all the way back in 2013 highlighting the benefits of removing the dams. Advocates also point out the importance of salmon restoration projects, given California's decision this year to close the entire ocean salmon fishery. Not everyone supports the project, of course. Republican Congressman Doug LaMalfa and Cliff Bentz said in a press release that other factors like overfishing and disease are more to blame for poor salmon numbers. They also point out that the dams offer benefits like groundwater recharge and flood control, and they generate power for about 70,000 homes. The company that owns the dams, PacifiCorp, says that power generation will be replaced with wind turbines, so residents won't be without electricity. The Klamath River Renewal Corporation also points out that a mitigation fund has been created to help any homeowners who may be affected by flooding due to the removal of the dams. Whatever the arguments are for or against the project, these dams are slated to be gone next year. Between June and September of this year, the first and smallest dam, COPCO No. 2, will come out. In January 24, drawdown of the reservoirs will begin. By the end of 2024, all four dams will be removed and restoration work will begin and continue well in the future. Removing the dams is only the first and probably easiest step in this process. If the river is going to be a good place for salmon to spawn, there's still a lot of work left to do.
Dam removal can be a little bit of a messy business. So we're here to get reservoir sediment stabilized through reestablishment of native vegetation. Provide some immediate high-quality habitat for returning salmonids as they make their way through former dam footprints and into river channels where they haven't been in over 100 years, and really jumpstart the recovery of this landscape.
They're off to a good start. Restoration groups have already collected 19 billion seeds of native plants they'll be using to get the lower Klamath looking like it was before the first dam went in 1908. Moving on to the Urban Wildlife Desk. Mountain lions have reportedly moved into a small town in western Idaho. Idaho Fish and Game reports that at least two lions have been captured on camera in the town of McCall, including areas near residential neighborhoods. The majority of the photos have come from doorbell security cameras, though fortunately most from unoccupied residences. Idaho Fish and Game says the lions are likely there to stay for the winter. The deer herd that also lives in town offers an ample food supply, and the surrounding areas have deep snow and no prey. It's uncommon for towns to have resident deer herds, even in Idaho. A biologist over there tells me that some residents feed the local mule deer, which has kept them from migrating. Thanks to this kind-hearted but ill-advised habit, residents must now deal with a pair of live mountain lions that have moved in to eat the thing that they were trying to feed. It's like a college friend who overstays his welcome, except instead of eating your leftovers, he stalks you to the bathroom at night and pounces on your back from an elevated position. Jokes aside, mountain lion attacks aren't all that common. A mountain lion researcher told Deseret News in 2021 that there have been less than 24 people killed by lions in North America in the last 100 years. But Idaho Fish and Game is still advising residents to keep pets on a leash while walking and to bring them inside at night. Residents are also advised not to walk or run at night, at dawn, or at dusk, and to block access to areas under decks or homes. If you ever encounter a lion, don't run. Make eye contact, make noise, and try to look as big and scary as you can. In another story of wild animals who can't take a hint, a herd of elk has found their way back to Salt Lake City 1 month after being relocated. This herd has set up camp in the grassy medians at the intersection of I-80 and I-215, which presents a real problem for motorists. I don't know from personal experience, but I imagine an elk in the windshield can really ruin your afternoon. On March 19, highways were closed as wildlife officials herded the animals off the medians and back into the mountains. They even used a helicopter to convince the 80 or so cervids that highways aren't a great place to raise your kids, but just 1 week later, local media reported that about 40 of those elk had wandered back down the mountain and taken up residence along the median. City officials say they don't plan to move the elk again, but they're developing a new strategy for when it stops snowing. That's all I've got for you this week. Thank you so much for listening. Remember to write in to ASKCAL, that's AskCal at themeateater.com, and let me know what's going on in your neck of the woods. On top of that, as the snow starts to recede, you're going to have a bunch of nasty branches and dirty lawns poking through. Head on down to your local steel dealer or dial up www.steeldealers.com, who can tell you who your local steel dealer is. They're going to get you set up with what you need. You're going to be looking like a pro, and they won't try to send you home with what you don't. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you next week. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. That's SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. Hey, I just sat down with the owners and operators of Maui Nui Venison. They're on a mission to balance axis deer populations on Maui while giving back to the community and run a totally sustainable operation. For folks like me who want to get your own meat but aren't always successful, you can become a snack subscriber, get some axis deer sticks sent right to your door. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNui. Venison.com and use promo code CAL for 20% off your first order.